Welcome back to Insight on Cap Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. When I say folk music or Americana, a certain song style may pop into your head, but our next guest is dismantling how we have long experienced these genres in the mainstream by going deep into the past, uprooting what we think we know, and giving this foundational creative expression new life. Jake Blunt is an Afrofuturist folk musician and a scholar of traditional Black American folk music who resurrects and rearranges centuries-old work with a modern approach. The best way to understand his work is to experience it. Jake has performed at Carnegie Hall, the Library of Congress, and NPR's Tiny Desk last year, and this week he'll be performing at the Sophia in Sacramento Thursday night. Jake Blunt joins us now. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
When I was listening to your music yesterday, it brought the biggest smile to my face. I loved it. I'm curious, what came first for you? Because there's a lot of research that is behind your music and your artistry. What came first, the passion for music as a creative outlet or researching the past?
The research came first for me, actually. I'd been playing music for a long time, but not this type of music. I grew up as a little rocker kid with an electric guitar and wound up having kind of a fortunate chance encounter with a banjo player back home in Washington, D.C., where I'm from, who told me a little bit about the history of the instrument, that it had been invented by enslaved Africans here in the Americas. And that prompted me to want to learn more about it. And through doing that research and meeting the community associated with that instrument and the music attached to it, I kind of just fell in love with it and started playing all the time.
Given that your hometown is D.C., you know, what significance did growing up in our nation's capital have on you?
Oh, a lot. I mean, my parents are both political journalists. So it was a constant immersion in controversy and the discourse of the day, for better or for worse. But I'm grateful for it, as weird as it was in retrospect, and as weird as it seems every time I go back now that I live somewhere else, I'm grateful to have grown up there.
I want to get to Afrofuturistic music. I mean, how did you land on that as a form of expression?
Well, I think it felt logical to me in some ways, you know, Afrofuturism being this kind of expression of alternative versions of the future, that come out in Black literature, in Black art, in Black music, going back centuries now, before the term Afrofuturism was ever coined. I mean, there are scholars like Isaiah Lavender III who have done all this research on, you know, Frederick Douglass and Harriet Jacobs. How many of these old authors that we've all read in school might fall under that banner? And I think the same thing applies to music, that the music that I was studying, even before I started making explicitly Afrofuturist work, was Afrofuturist, right? These are technologies that were created to serve specific purposes, whether they're work songs that were meant to regulate the pace of labor and coordinate people's actions in a field or labor setting to keep people from getting hurt, or whether they're spirituals that were meant to pass on a coded meaning about how and when you might want to travel to escape slavery in some cases, or just to go steal some food so your family could eat in other cases. And I also think that there's a level of science fiction involved when you go back and learn all that old material, because, you know, you're kind of fabricating this old thing. Even when you go back into the older archives in the way that I sometimes do, in the way many of my peers do, with the mentality of, I'm going to learn this song, I'm going to bring the essence of this song to the now. The people back then couldn't do that, right? And especially when you're working with recorded music, with these field recordings that folklorists went out and made on acetate discs or wax cylinders, depending on the era in question. You have to also grapple with the fact that you're using a technology that is not native to the music, that you're not learning from a person, you're learning from a copy of this person, a facsimile of them that's been passed through several different forms of media and changed a little bit in each one of those transductions along the way. There's a lot of making things up, even when you take traditional music at face value and just try to reenact it. When you hear that banjo tune and try to play it exactly the same way on your banjo, you're making stuff up. And I decided I wanted to just embrace that and go a little further with it and talk about some things that I think we need to be talking about right now that people back in the day didn't have the scientific knowledge to discuss.
Yeah, and I think to really capture that, I listened to your NPR Tiny Desk performance. It was almost a year ago. It was January of last year. It wasn't just you. I mean, it was eight other musicians. I mean, you had vocalists, you had a rapper, a fiddle player, drums, guitar, banjo, tambourine, bass. I mean, there was a whole party there. How was that experience for you?
It was difficult. I mean, it was a very good time. It wasn't difficult interpersonally or emotionally. But, you know, I am a one-man show over here for the most part. I got a great booking agent, but nobody to help me put together things like that. So it was a big logistical lift getting everybody in place, getting rehearsals done, making sure everybody knew what they were doing. And, of course, it's the Tiny Desk, right? That's like the, one of the biggest things that's ever going to happen in your career. So it was a high-pressure situation. It was at the very beginning of the tour, and the next two nights I fell asleep on couches backstage during intermission because I was so exhausted. So it was a heavy lift, but I'm really glad that we made it. I'm really proud of that performance, and I'm really happy that I got to bring so much of my wonderful music community onto that, well, not a stage, but, you know, behind that desk with me.
Yeah. Well, it was well worth all that effort and all that stress and all that energy that you exerted. We're going to listen to excerpts from the Tiny Desk from last year. The first song is Man Was Burning.
People in the land of Georgia, little they cared about God. When the news got in the land that the man was burning on a log. Counting his money. Yeah, he was grinning mighty broad. He held a greenback dollar aloft, said this money gonna make me a god. I'll tell you about the man was burning way down yonder in the land of Georgia. The man was burning for blaspheming the name of God. People in the land of Georgia, dripping blood. The people gathered to witness. His friends got frightened and scared.
Jake, what is the history of this song?
So this is a song called The Man Was Burning, and I learned it from a recording of a guy named Joe Lee from State Penitentiary, Virginia. And it's a special one for me because my family is from a town called Smithfield in Tidewater, Virginia, which if anybody listening has ever had Smithfield ham or any Smithfield pork products, that's what we do there. Most of the members of my family worked in that meatpacking plant at one time or another up until my generation. And it's rare sometimes to find music from that part of the world. A lot of the folkloric collection that went on was farther west in the Piedmont and in the mountains. So it was cool to find something that was relatively close. In state penitentiaries up toward Richmond, it is in the Piedmont, but it was still nearby. And I'd never heard it before. As far as I know, other than Joe Lee and one other person who I guess was recorded in Danville, Virginia, singing a different version of the song, I think I'm the only modern recording of that. And it was a really cool thing. I just heard the song and decided to mess around with it and wound up writing all the parts and playing everything except the bass just in my apartment over the course of like 3 days, and the song was done in probably a week, and it's still my top streamed song. Got picked as one of the best blues songs of 2022 by Spotify. So I'm really proud of how that came together, and definitely felt like catching some lightning in a bottle.
What do you think that means, that people have become so receptive, not only to this song, The Man Was Burning, but to overall your work and why you're doing what you're doing?
I think people have been ready for it, honestly. And this is the thing, right? So that song, The Man Was Burning, like I said, I don't think any other modern artists have recorded it. I don't know anyone other than me and my band that knows it. Except, you know, we went over to play this big festival in Denmark that's like a pop festival. Like the headliners were Lil Nas X, Lizzo, and Kendrick Lamar. And this audience of like 6-foot-tall blonde people were like singing every word to that song. I guess it had been put on some playlist or whatever, and they loved it. And I just think that, you know, we have this pattern with roots music in the US and probably more broadly, that every 10 or so years, there's this big boom. And we can think of like, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou as one of the things that incited one of those booms, or that weird early 2010s Americana stomp clap hey boom that we had back when I was in high school. But I think that fresh perspectives on this material are often appreciated. And I also think that there's a bit of a breath of fresh air because so much of the music industry these days, partially just due to people's prejudices and preconceived notions about what it means to be a musician, and partially because of our very broken intellectual property law system in this country, privileges creating just original music. And I think that original music has a valuable place in creation and in society. I also think that it misses something that the older traditional stuff has, and probably vice versa, right? I think both sides are needed. But I think that hearing this old stuff that by design has to speak across time and across difference because it's been passed through so many hands on its way down to us, and hearing it recontextualized to speak to us now instead of presented as this kind of fossilized thing out of a museum or an archive, I think it's exciting to people. I think people want to feel attached to that old stuff and sometimes don't know how to get there because that old stuff isn't being reformatted in a way that speaks to them. And I'm hopeful every day that I may be learning to envision what these traditions might have sounded like if they had been allowed to grow organically alongside all of the other musical innovation that was taking place in the communities that spawned them. Where would old time string band music be today if Black people had still been playing that while they were inventing disco, right? It's a really interesting thought experiment. And I think that idea of restoring something to the music that has been lost because it's been historicized, because people have resisted changing it, and maybe warped or distorted it as a result, ironically enough. I think people are ready for that.
Well, I want to listen to one of your oldest bits of music. You had said this in Tiny Dust that it is from 1687, so over 400 years ago, and it's called The Downward Road.
Thought they would do mighty well, but when they come to find out, they done made up a bed in hell. Lord, the downward road is crowded. Lord, believe it so. Crowded. Lord, believe it so. Gather round. Lo, I've seen what the trickster hid. Hear the sound of a king trying to get it. The water rising, surrounding everybody that's in it. And Lil Silas wanna come home. All he got is the cot that he drum on. Whole family pole, he was taught not to run from it when you come from it. But the king ain't never alone. A feeling Silas thought that he never would know. The water rose, he a old soul. Said his upbringing sold him it all. It's nothing he don't know. The water rose, but he homegrown. He feel like he seen everything. He been outside like an evergreen. And as for Silas, he just want a chance. The king got the means to, but he don't wanna ask. Silas got older and took over. The same king and his story still running from his past.
Look at our old grass rulers, thought they would do mighty well.
And that is Demeanor, Justin Harrington on rap vocals. Jake, we only have like a minute left, but people have really, I mean, myself included, got just a wonderful sense of what people will experience on Thursday when you're here in Sacramento at the Sophia. What do you want people to take away? How do you want them to leave Thursday night?
I think that right now, what I would like to have people take away from the show is the mindfulness of the fact that throughout history, people have faced dark futures like the one we are currently staring down, and that these songs were created as a way to help people envision a future that was different and to help people envision solutions and work toward those solutions, even when the powers that be resisted them. And I would hope that people would leave my show feeling rejuvenated and reinvigorated and feeling the urgency of finding a solution to climate change, of finding a solution to institutionalized racism, and of creating a ceasefire.
Jake, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Jake Blunt is an Afrofuturist folk musician who is a scholar of Black American folk and rearranges work from the past to highlight the ways African Americans have shaped and defined roots music and Americana. Jake will be performing here in Sacramento in downtown at the Sophia Thursday night, January 18th at 7 p.m. And that is it for Insight today, live at noon with a rebroadcast at 7 p.m. You can learn more about all of our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. If you want to join the conversation, you can email us at insight@capradio.org. Thank you to producer Sarit Lashinsky and managing editor Aram Sarkissian. Our digital producer and audio engineer is Chris Feltz. Insight's technical director is Mark Jones, and our show music is produced by Adrian Gilmore. I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.